Welcome to our podcast. This is Friends on Fire.
I'm Mike. I'm a lifelong devotee of financial independence. I even wrote a book about it.
And I'm Maggie, a newer convert, but just as passionate, especially on the intersection of minimalism and financial independence. We're one and the
same. We are two like-minded friends who believe that talking about money with your friends and family opens the door to financial well-being.
The Friends on Fire podcast is about dispelling myths, building financial acumen, and sharing your financial independence journey with the people you care about.
This is Friends on Fire.
Hey, Mike.
Hey, Maggie.
You been to any big expensive parties lately?
I went to a wedding this weekend.
I don't think we've ever jumped into our show topic this quickly.
I don't think we planned it this way, but I did go to a family wedding, and we're talking about weddings on this episode. So we get a very clean segue between our intro and our show topic.
Yeah. I'll start off, Mike, by saying, you know, we're calling this episode Big Expensive Parties, like halfway in jest. You know, we respect and understand that what we're talking about here today, which is weddings, bat mitzvahs, bar mitzvahs, they're founded in like religious traditions and there's a lot of history and spiritual respect in history. And I don't even know the right way to refer to that. But let's be honest, a lot of these traditions have turned into big expensive parties, which we'll get into, and are the expensive ornate, you know, over the top part of it is not part of how it was founded and the initial tradition that it was started in. So I just want to note that, but you just went to a big expensive party.
It wasn't that big. It wasn't that expensive, okay. But it was in Germany. So yeah. My brother-in-law got married and we, Britta and I flew over for the weekend.
Hey, can we clarify real quick? Not just your brother-in-law, but that's actually Britta's twin that got married or no?
No, her older brother.
Oh, her other brother. Okay. Got it. Okay. Okay. So not as special, right? As the one. I'm just joking.
Yeah. He listens to the show.
Oh, okay. Wait, is he the one that got my shirt for me?
Yeah, of course.
Oh, I thought it was her twin that did that. I get them. I didn't know. So many brothers, yeah. You know.
He does you a favor and now you insult him.
No, I know. I should have sent him a present.
So this was an unusual trip because we flew to Europe for a weekend.
How long were you on the ground, like feet on the ground in Germany?
We arrived Friday morning. Our plane landed Friday morning.
Okay.
And we left Monday morning.
Okay. So you had 72 hours.
Yeah.
3 days. Okay. That is quick for like jet lag and just adjusting to.
But on the plus side, I was able to stay up until 2 a.m. at this wedding.
That's
only
awesome.
Because I was 6 hours behind.
Yeah, I like it.
And I was still tired at the end of it.
I like it. You probably had to like come home and sleep for days to make up for all that.
Oh yeah, definitely. I'm still tired.
Okay, so how was it? Was it like you said it wasn't necessarily big or expensive?
Yeah, there was 65 people.
Okay.
And it wasn't, you know, weddings in Europe generally, Germany at least, are not like American weddings or what we think of as American weddings. So it was like very nice and very tasteful, but I don't think very expensive at all. Like my wedding, I got married in Germany.
Yeah.
A long time ago.
Do you know who paid for it?
I don't know. However, I don't think it was so expensive that everybody wasn't clamoring to pay for it because they wanted to share in that experience.
Yeah.
So I think my brother-in-law and his now wife, I bet they paid
how
for
old
some
is
of
he?
It.
He's like
40.
Grown up. Okay. I was going to say grown up. He's not like in his
early. He's not a child. Yeah, so he has money. I bet he wanted to pay for it. I bet the parents wanted to pay for it. I think this was just, it was not like $100,000 thing where everybody's like, shit, who's going to cover this?
Well, it's funny that that's why I was asking how old he is, because we'll get into this, but the age matters, right? Like, and there's a big, you know, there's a growing trend of people getting married older in life.
Yeah.
And the older you are, the more established you are. You have your own job, you have money. You're not like, you know, you're not necessarily needing of someone else to pay for your wedding.
Right.
Which plays into many of the financial aspects of these. So we're going to dig into a ton of things related to this. But Mike, you just mentioned you also got married in Germany. So tell me about that, because I think before we get into these, let's talk about our own thing. So again, we're going to focus on the biggest, most expensive parties that we know of, which are weddings and bar/bat mitzvahs. And you, interestingly, Mike, if people, we don't talk about it a lot because we don't really even talk about religion a lot on here. But you grew up Jewish. Mm-hmm. Your mom's Jewish.
Yeah.
Your dad's not. You grew up Jewish, so you had a bar mitzvah.
That's right.
And so you've had a bar mitzvah and a wedding.
Yes.
And before we get into all of our thoughts and advice, like how did you personally handle this, especially coming from like, you know, a fire family and a pretty, you know, frugal, like thoughtful in how you guys, you know, spent your money family?
Well, let's start with the bar mitzvah. I called my mom this morning to ask her how much she paid for this because I was of course a child when,
yes,
and when this happened and not responsible for planning. She said it cost under $1,000.
Okay,
so we had the,
even back then that was like a good price. That's,
yeah,
not a lot.
Yeah. We had the ceremony at the temple. I did my bar mitzvah thing, read from the Torah, the whole shebang. And then we came home and had a catered reception at our house.
At your house, which is a, yeah, huge, I mean, venues are like the most, mm-hmm, expensive place off, or the part of the budget often. So
yeah,
I'm sure you saved a ton having it at your house. And then you can hire whoever you want to cater it, right?
Yeah,
there's a lot of affordable catering options. Okay, so as I would have expected, a very, you know, cost-conscious bar mitzvah. What about your wedding?
The wedding, you would think, was extremely expensive.
It looked, and you sent me a couple photos,
yeah,
the other,
we'll,
day.
We'll share some pictures on Instagram.
It looked like it was in like some sort of old castle or,
yeah,
play, I don't know, something old and fancy and expensive.
Yeah, we got married in a 17th century castle in Germany. And it was not very expensive at all. You know, having someone who's European, I really wanted to take advantage of that, you know, the benefits that come from that continent. And, you know, castles are pretty cool and I've always liked them. So I was really pushing for that. And Britta at the time and her family were like, Mike, this is not how Germans get married. We don't like rent castles. Like, you are such an American. It turns out they love the whole thing. And it was a very memorable experience, but it was not expensive at all, just because the expectation in the industry is not set up that way. So we had a 50-person wedding. We had, I think, maybe like 15, 20 people come over from the U.S.
Let me ask you a quick question. Did you invite a lot more people, but because it was so far away, that was who came? Like, did you?
No, no.
We did not.
Yeah,
okay,
we kept it small.
Got it. Okay. I was just asking because I know destination weddings are always a little tricky on, like, you can sometimes,
yeah,
go big on inviting and just kind of see who wants to make the trip.
Yeah.
But that's, you know, tricky. That's tricky etiquette wise even.
Yeah. So we rented this castle, which I believe was 4,000 euro for the ceremony and the reception,
that's,
which would
good,
have been like $5,000 at the time. And it was part of this like hotel complex. So there's a hotel on the grounds, which also caters and staffs the reception. And I think we paid another 5,000 euro for the catering and staffing and, like, you know, the decorations for the tables and the cake and all that sort of stuff. It was all just provided as part of this thing. It's not like there's 100 vendors we had to deal with. And then we also paid for our American guests. We put them up for a couple nights before and after in Britta's hometown, and then also at this hotel. So all in, it was $14,000 for hotel stays and this reception, which was like amazing. I,
yeah,
loved it. What an amazing memory for me and Britta and everybody there.
So first off, I wasn't invited, but whatever.
Yeah,
you know?
Well, I didn't know you that long ago.
Yeah, I guess so. And second off, I'm going to ask a really inappropriate question. Who paid that $14,000?
Our parents split it.
Okay. And did you have like a thoughtful discussion with them up front to get into like the decision that you guys would split it?
Let me remember how this went. I think my dad was like, knowing that this was not, you know, he knew me and he knew Britta and we were both very frugal and this was not going to be 100,000 things. So he quickly like asked how he could help, and my parents did help with like a lot of planning and helped with the American stuff, the Americans coming over to Germany. And then afterwards we all went to Switzerland for a week. So my friends came, Britta's family came, my parents were there, and we sat down and we were like, well, here's the final cost. And my dad was like, I you know, I'd really like to pay for it. And I think Britta's dad said, well, why don't we just split it? And so that was it. And in, yeah. in And my dad said afterwards, like, he would have paid the entire thing many times over because it was such like a great experience. Cool, for yeah. him. And that's everybody awesome. Wanted to contribute. Like Britta and I were very interested in paying. We could have paid for it all ourselves at yeah. the time, but our parents wanted to do this for us. And it wasn't so much that people felt uncomfortable about it. What about nice. You?
Well, I've been married twice, as mm-hmm. you know. I won't go into as much detail on the first one.
That's the one I care about, though. Well, that's the no, one I don't know about.
I'll give you detail. I'll give you detail in the sense of, you know, we were in our early 20s. I always wanted to get married on the beach. We got married in Hilton Head, South Carolina, on the beach, on like a, at the Dunes house. And it was like a wedding. I'm not even sure I'd call it a wedding venue. It was like a big outdoor deck that was part of a community there. And they did weddings there and other types of parties. And you actually could rent it like oddly affordably compared. I mean, it was way cheaper than like having a hotel wedding and, you know, all this other stuff. We were very much doing like everything on a budget. I don't remember it like down to the penny, but I remember that it was about $10,000. And we, and again, and we had about 100 people there, maybe a little bit more than 100. And it was about $10,000. And that at the time was like very much a budget wedding. Like I knew what other people were spending on weddings. And it was much more affordable. And we paid for a lot of it ourselves. My parents chipped in some. I don't remember a lot of the exact specifics. I just remembered we paid for a lot of it.
Okay. So what about your second wedding, which you post pictures about? That was very nice. This one I know more about.
Yeah. So what's interesting is the second wedding, you know, I was, God, how old was I? I was 35 or 30. I don't know, older than 35 or something. And it was a destination wedding. So there was nobody there. There were three people in attendance, which are our daughters. We did not invite anyone. It was a, I don't even think you call it a destination wedding. It's not an elopement because it wasn't a surprise. Everybody knew about it. We just were very much like, we went to Emerald Lake in Canada, had an amazing, picturesque, beautiful wedding in the woods in front of a lake. And it was very like intimate and again, just our kids, but we kind of did it as like a vacation. We did a 2-week vacation in Canada in lieu of spending money on a wedding. So the wedding itself was not expensive. I think we had to pay a few hundred bucks to the like $500 or something. And then like a couple hundred bucks for the officiant to the like Emerald Lake people to actually just have a ceremony at a random time in the middle of the day. We weren't like taking up a lot of their space. And then we were staying at this place, this resort called Emerald Lake. And what was expensive was 2 weeks in Canada. And we kind of were like balling out because we were like, well, we're getting married. It was the first like international trip we took our kids on. This was pre my goals to be on fire.
Oh,
that's the right term.
You're already caveating this before you give the cost. Let's hear it.
Honestly, I don't know the exact cost, but I once did, and I should have asked Greg, but I think it was about $20,000.
Wow.
But maybe it was more like
no 50, people.
Maybe it was what? No, to be clear, that wasn't the wedding. That was for a 2-week trip around Canada.
I know.
Canada.
I'm just kidding.
And we stayed. I mean, we stayed at like a Four Seasons hotel in Jasper, which was amazing. We stayed. I mean, Emerald Lake. It was like we stayed in this cabin on the lake. It was $1,000 a night. I remember that. Mm-hmm. And so you know, I bought a wedding dress. I spent maybe like $500 on a wedding dress, which at the time did not seem like a lot. It was more the trip that was expensive. We like balled out on the trip. Like we stayed in nice places. We were not super cost conscious in any way on that trip. And it was amazing memories. Again, it was like the first international trip we had taken our kids on. It was the first like long trip that we had taken all the kids on. Anyways, so it was a fun experience, but it was, again, a time in my life when I had no trouble spending money and had a lot to spend and didn't have a lot of other kind of goals of what I wanted to do with that money. And I say it was pre-fire, but it was probably like right, you know, it was within a year or so of when Greg and I both started getting like a little bit more thoughtful and conscious about kind of our money and, you know, what we were saving for and all that. Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right. Enough backstory about us.
Yeah. You don't want to hear about my bar mitzvah? Just kidding. I'm not Jewish. I did have a really, really awesome party when I was 13. I think it cost like $50. Okay. Let's transition to what initially inspired this episode.
Okay.
So we talk about all sorts of financial topics. We probably would have covered this eventually anyways. We've got a number of listener questions on this, but my favorite thing that really inspired my passion on this topic is when we were leaving our jobs, and when, you know, in the past year, about a year ago, we started telling our companies that we were leaving. So it wasn't a surprise. And so everyone, like Greg and I both kind of had this farewell tour of conversations we had to have with people, right? Where we're telling them what we're leaving. And so Greg was in a conversation with a bunch of senior, I mean, I think the CEO of the company might've been on, but like senior executives at his company that he worked with on, he did a lot of like M&A deals. And so he was dealing with a lot of executives, and he told them he was retiring. And like the first thing that one of them said to him was like, well, how are you going to pay for all the weddings for your girls? They knew he had three girls. And I was just like, oh my God, like, what a ridiculous question. What a ridiculous reason to continue. First off, and this is why I'll get off on like a whole feminist rant on this of like, we'll get into it in a minute. But I just was so fired up by that comment. I was like, geez, like, again, I'll get into why I was so fired up on it. And then also, I recently was talking to a friend in my neighborhood, and she was talking about her son, who is Jewish, and well, they're Jewish, and so her son is also Jewish, and they were talking about his bar mitzvah, and they were talking about one they just came from, and they knew the people well, and so they were like, it's $40,000, and they were just kind of like, this is really expensive, like, we don't have that kind of money. And I was telling them, like, I was like, you don't have to have that kind of money to have a really cool bar or bat mitzvah. I was like, we were actually at the pool, and my daughter recently has, in the last couple of years, has been to a couple of bat mitzvahs for a couple of her friends. And ironically, like a couple of them were actually hosted at our pool's clubhouse. It's a pretty nice clubhouse. You can rent it for just a couple hundred bucks, and then you can like bring in whatever catering and alcohol and whatever. And they were like really cool, awesome parties. She had the best, most amazing time. And there was like all these just neat, like photo booths and just giveaways and all this stuff. And when you do it there, I guarantee you it's not $40,000. You could do one there for $5,000. And it was an amazing party. And as a attendee, it was like the best thing she'd ever been to in her life. Cause it was just this, like, compared to other parties, it's like this over the top party. And so anyways, I've been in multiple discussions with people. And then we recently had a listener question come in. And I thought this was just great. So I'm just going to read it. My wife and I have two little girls. We're on the same page in almost all things finance, except weddings. My wife and I had a blowout wedding. And while I enjoyed it, I would have gladly taken her father's offer of a large sum of money to pay our down payment on our first home. She wants our girls to have a blowout wedding. And I just cannot stomach the idea of spending 50 to 70K per kid. Don't get me wrong, a good party would be nice. We have a lot of years left to make this decision, but other listeners may be in a different spot. And so they were kind of just asking, like, what should we do, right? Mm-hmm. And we're going to get into our thoughts on this topic. That is what this episode is all about. And so I think before we get into our recommendations and our thoughts and kind of how we approach this, I think it's worth getting into a little bit of like some stats and history on what people typically
Maggie
spend
stats. Maggie hit stats. Me with it.
This is like real. This is research based. I've been doing research in my retirement. You know, I got a little time to Google some stuff. So the average cost there. Look, there's like 50 sources for all these things. So you could find sources that have different average costs. And even when I was researching, there were a ton of different ones. But there was one quoted on Motley Fool, which I know you and I both like the Motley Fool, so I'm going to trust them. The average cost of a wedding in 2021 was $27,000. That's a lot. And that actually is low. Remember, averages. That means there's people who spent, you know, $5,000 and there's people who spent $100,000, right?
Yeah. And average family income in the US is like $40,000.
Yeah.
So this is really high.
That's high. It's very high. There was all the data shows a funny dip in 2021 because everyone had to cancel their weddings mm-hmm. that year. So you know the data is accurate. And then the average cost of a what, this is funny. I can never find like one number, but there were a lot of ranges for the average cost of a bar or bat mitzvah. It's between like 40 to 70K, which is also really high for a 13-year-old, you know, a 12 or a 13-year-old.
That's crazy.
And so that's where we're at in terms of like what people are typically spending. So these are big events. These are like in line with a year of college or longer than a year, depending on, you know, where you end up going to college. What to me is more fascinating is the etiquette and the history of these things. So what got me so fired up, and it got Greg fired up also, was when his coworker made that comment about, you know, how are you going to pay for all the weddings of your daughters, knowing that, you know, he had three daughters, is, you know, the etiquette of girls' or women's parents paying for a wedding. You know where that came from, right, Mike? Or do you?
Probably related to dowry.
Yeah. Right? So hundreds and hundreds of years ago, women were considered chattel, which is a term that means like possession or property. And the bride's family had to pay off the groom's family in the form of a dowry. It's kind of what people more commonly know as a dowry, to basically to take their daughter off their hands. And I'm oversimplifying it, but it was like the woman did not add as much like value to the marriage. They weren't going to be the ones that made the money, everything else. And they needed someone to, you know, like, they were literally like property of like that a family had to take care of. So they're like, hey, man, if you take care of this woman, I will pay you a dowry and I will like transition her to you. And she's now your problem.
I think this is more recent than like hundreds and hundreds of years ago. I think this was like 100 years ago.
Well, this still happens in some cultures. So yeah. In Western culture, this was hundreds of years ago. But what's interesting too, because I really was like reading up on this I just want to understand mm-hmm. more. I don't want to knock things that I don't fully understand and kind of respect the tradition of.
I picture you being in like a feminist rage last night, researching this and just being angry.
Yeah. Yeah. So I thought this was interesting. This one breakdown of dowries that traditionally have three different purposes. One is to help them get their life started, which I can respect and I understand. I think that's where a lot of people still want to help their kids with their wedding for that reason, or instead will offer to pay for a down payment of a house or whatever. And so I get it. They want to help them get some real estate, because sometimes real estate was involved in the dowry also. Like, here's my daughter and some land and some money for a wedding. So it was one to help them get their life started. Second, it actually gave them protection against like an abusive marriage or divorce, because at the time, like the tradition was takebacks were a real thing. So if you got divorced and that you were given like land or money, you actually had to give it back. That was like the etiquette. And then the last thing was truly an enticement. So it was a large dowry would make a daughter seem more marriageable, like more marriage material. Like, please take her. She's worth a lot. I give you a big dowry. And it's really sad. Like,
yeah, it again, all seems so ridiculous the last
point.
Now.
Yeah, the last point of it is the part that, you know, upsets me, right? Is that I have to pay someone to take my daughter off my hands and pay her in the form of funding their wedding and, you know, other things. So look, this is super outdated, honestly, like quite offensive to women in many ways. And I'm not just saying this because I have three daughters and don't want to have to fully bankroll their weddings, right? And Greg's comment when he first even, I think he actually said this to some of those people. He was on his way out, so he probably was like, you know, not caring as much. But he was like, look, women offer just as much potential into a marriage as men do. And in these days, like I've made more than any person I was ever married to, right? And so if there's part of that tradition is rooted in the idea that like women typically did not work in the home and men did. And so again, that was something you were doing to kind of find a working man to take your daughter off your hands. And by the way, this is all in like heterosexual relationships historically also is where this tradition comes from. And so the idea, so much has changed in terms of women's earning power, earning potential, everything else. There's a number of reasons why this is so kind of outdated and offensive to me. And again, I'm like jokingly, it's not because I'm just being cheap because I happen to have daughters. Also, how unfair is that you just like happen to have daughters and so you're supposed to foot the bill for something because you have daughters too, Mike, right? I keep forgetting. We all have daughters.
Did you just remember that?
No, I just for the context of this conversation, I just re-realized it. So I will say on the flip side, I will make a point that look, stereotypically, a woman is often the one planning a wedding and making some of the decisions that might cost a lot of money, because typically a guy is just in a lot of my experience has been like less involved, right? And so there are some angles where it's like, I certainly can appreciate that whoever is wanting and requiring something to be so expensive might want to foot more of the bill for something. That's one angle on it. But look, there's a lot of different considerations here. And so we're going to get into many of them today. The good news is in Western culture, dowries are mostly a thing of the past. But the tradition of daughters' parents paying for weddings is still kind of in a lot of people's head and like still a piece of a starting point that people often kind of think of.
Yeah. All right. Let's get into some of our advice. I think everybody can see where this is going to go with us.
Yeah. If you've been listening. I don't know. Show. I will say, I think we have some like unique angles to add to this, but you're right. It's a lot that's in line with our kind of values and intentions of how we spend money.
All right. So let's jump into our first main point and piece of advice. And it's a theme that comes up regularly on this show. Nobody cares.
It's your tagline, Mike.
Yeah, it's my favorite tagline.
Yeah.
Now, I say that sort of kidding because weddings, bar mitzvahs, even birthdays to some degrees, like these big life events, they are important. Like that, like having a memorable experience in big life events is like, it's part of being alive and you should have something that you feel good about and look back on fondly. But you absolutely need to separate that from what you think you need to do or what you're trying to do to impress other people. Like you should care about your wedding and you should do what you think is right.
Well, and they want to have fun at a wedding, right? Like when I go to a wedding, I want to have fun, but I don't care if it's at a hotel, which is one of the most expensive places you can. I mean, we both have a history in the hotel business. One of the most expensive places you can have a wedding because of the cost of food and beverage at a hotel and the cost of the venue. But like some of the most fun weddings I remember, like my brother's wedding was amazing and his wife is like so creative and it was just so cool. But it was hosted at a friend of theirs, like this big farm basically, right? And a big tent, a barn, and which is a big trend of wedding venues lately. But it was so cool. And it was half the cost, probably a third of the, or 25% of the cost of what a hotel wedding venue would have cost. And what I remember is a fun wedding. I don't give a crap if it's at a hotel. I don't care what you spent on your wedding. I just want to have a good time, right?
Yeah. Like you probably don't remember like what flowers they had or cared how much they cost, right?
Her flowers were all made out of paper. She made them herself out of these so I do remember that because, and she saved a ton of money and we still have those bouquets.
But you remember it because it was unique.
Yeah, I remember
She had spent $1,000 per table on flowers, you would probably have no recollection of it whatsoever.
I couldn't tell you the flowers that were at anyone else's wedding that had real flowers. I can only tell you hers because she had these handmade, like she made them herself, paper flowers, and they were so cool. Okay. Number two, speaking of what we're talking about, there are no rules for these things, right? And even if there were rules, like some of the, you know, historical traditions and things that we're talking about, rules are meant to be broken, right? Even traditions are meant to evolve, right? And so especially archaic and kind of inflated traditions and rules, which we were talking about with dowries, right? They're meant to put your own touch and spin on them. And we talk about this all the time, but it is personal finance. So in line with the spirit of like nobody cares, everyone is going to make their own unique decisions and discussions on these. And we were talking about this earlier, like parents may decide to split it like Mike and Britta did. People are getting married at older ages. And so they're paying for weddings themselves. Everyone's financial resources are different and come into play, right? And so I was in some of the research I was even doing, there was a Martha Stewart quote, right? Of like, you work it out, make sure that each party is comfortable with its contribution. And so there's a lot of different ways to have these discussions, which we'll talk more about, but there's no rules. Just remember that there are no rules. You do what you want. It's your thing.
So Maggie, the one rule that comes to mind when I hear you saying this is the engagement ring rule, where you're supposed to spend 3 months of your salary on a ring. Do you know where that rule came from?
No, but that's the sort of rule that should be broken. But go ahead.
The De Beers Diamond Company came up with that rule as a marketing campaign.
I remember hearing that a long time ago. You're right.
This is why all of these rules are nonsense. They are created by people who have an economic interest in you spending money with them. They're not for your benefit. You should ignore them.
There's a ton of things about like where like the traditions, not even the right word, but like women shaving their legs and like how that started. It started from a razor company that was trying to realize that they could, they needed to sell more razors, and there were only so many men's faces out there, but there were a lot, more, you know, get move on to women's legs and you've like doubled your market, tripled your market. They got two legs. and they're more square footage than a man's face, you know? Anyways, yes, it is crazy how many quote unquote like traditions are started actually as a successful marketing campaign that turned into people thinking they needed to do things a certain way.
So the next point is that you should consider planning your wedding or your bar bat mitzvah or whatever activity as though nobody else would be there other than you and your family, and make that your starting point. Because if you start from like what would be the most impressive or what would people expect me to do, you're already down the path of doing something that's going to be super expensive and really not aligned with your values. Now, Maggie, to your point, it should be fun. Like you want to go to a wedding, you want to go to a bar mitzvah, it should be an enjoyable experience for other people. And so you do need to put some thought into what will make other people happy, but make sure that at the core of it, it is what you want.
Well, when I was having this discussion with someone about a bar mitzvah, and I mentioned that my kid had been to a couple of really cool ones, like at the clubhouse where we were ironically standing at the pool of at the time, the person said back to me, they were like, well, my parents are going to, they expect that, you know, and I'm like, cool. Like, that's where I'm like, what do you want? You know, and I'm not like going to like get into this. Right. But it's such a personal decision, but it is a, like, what do you want? Do it for you and for your child and what's important and what makes sense. And on that note, the next point is don't succumb to peer pressure, right? We talk about this all the time. Keeping up with the Joneses, lifestyle inflation, you know, using this example, just because someone else had a $40,000 bar bat mitzvah, hey, what, you can't even, if you can't even afford that, then don't get sucked into the, well, everyone's expecting me to have this big party and I'm going to be judged if I don't. And if it's a little bit less fancy, or if it's not at a hotel, or, you know, whatever it is, like, you really, I know it takes, I don't even know what the word is of what it takes, a lot of like confidence and wherewithal and just confidence in yourself to know that this is your decision, but you don't have to do things because of peer pressure or because that's what everyone else is doing, right? And well, your kid goes to a private school and everybody else is having these big fancy parties, right? Like, that's not the reason to do it.
One of the strategies that you can employ, and this is our next point, is that you should explore kind of the original tradition that the event is based on. Because if you go back 50 years, you're gonna escape all of this kind of modern inflation and like $50,000 bar mitzvahs. That didn't happen like 50 years ago. But you will start to get into the real historical and perhaps religious meaning and origin of all these activities, which, you know, there's a reason some of this stuff has been going on like this for hundreds of years. It's because like it's meaningful, it's important, it resonates with people. And so, you know, on a previous point, do something that's important to you. If you are struggling with that and you don't really know what you want this activity to be, go back to how it was done 100 years ago or how your grandparents did it, and you might find some really meaningful and memorable ideas for your event.
Yeah. And be curious, like, right. I just Googled the purpose of a wedding. It's to provide the bride and groom an opportunity to make promises to each other.
Oh, right? I like that.
It's not to, I'm not knocking a big party. It can be really fun, but like, that is not the actual purpose of a wedding. Right. And so, and even, when I was doing some research too around bar and bat mitzvahs, there's actually there's no history of a party. That's not how it started, right? That is a more modern take on it. There's actually some places where local Jewish leaders have actually limited the size and elaborateness of mitzvahs because of that very reason. So, for example, in 1730 in Berlin, only 10 men were permitted to attend, and music was banned at one point in mitzvahs in Prague. And those rules were actually created and meant to make sure that it was a smaller celebration than a wedding, which makes sense when you're, you know, younger versus, you know, just these different like life stages. And there was actually someone, I thought this was kind of funny. There was a rabbi in the 1950s who described them as being more bar than mitzvah. Just kind of funny play on words.
I like that.
It was sort of, you know, critiquing the over the top mitzvah parties, they have turned into over time. And it started with, you know, some more wealthy families, and it was a kind of more, it started kind of in a more Western tradition also. But I think there's just a lot in the point of like going back to the root of the tradition and grounding you in that, so that you don't feel, it's a way to fight that kind of peer pressure and some other things like Mike was saying. We've touched on this briefly, but as you're planning these things, realize there are alternative ways to do things less expensively, and you can buck the trend, right? So I use that example of my sister-in-law, who is like the craftiest person I know. She made these beautiful, elaborate bouquets out of paper. And that's, it was awesome. It was time intensive, but they were beautiful and they didn't die. And she had this really, just this cool thing to like give away to people too. Little things like, you know, you can hire a florist, or you can go buy flowers and like make your own flower arrangements. We talk about hotels. I mean, the venue is often one of the most expensive things. Venue and then catering and like alcohol, which is called like F&B in the industry for food and beverage. At a hotel, that's how they make their money on these events, right? And so the cost of having any private event at a hotel is incredibly expensive, often cost prohibitive for a lot of people. But there's a ton of other cool venues. You can have it at like a neighborhood clubhouse. You can have it at your house, right? Like you had your when you were 13, Mike, at your house, right? Mm-hmm. You can have them. There's just really cool like warehouse venues. There's a lot of trends around people having them like on these kind of big open pieces of land and farms and these cool barns that are lit up really beautifully, or tents even. And so there's so many different ways to have it and save money. If that is, you know, your goal and priority. And just don't be afraid to buck the trend and do things differently. Often the different weddings are the ones that you remember.
Yeah.
And that are not like, I actually think hotel weddings can be like kind of lame and just stuffy. And I don't know.
There you go. Offending all of our listeners at hotel weddings.
And I mean, you know, I still got a lot of hotel stock. I shouldn't do too much offending of that.
So, but before we get into some advice about how to talk about money and how to make decisions about how much to spend, one important point that I think we should cover is that you should not go into debt for this. Not that these aren't important events that we mentioned at the beginning of the show, but if doing what will make you happy will put you in debt, then you should really find a different way of doing it, or wait until you are no longer in that position. But having a party that throws you into debt, it will have such great financial ramifications for you that I think you would find it to be not worth it after 30 years.
Yeah, I mean, a great example is that Canada trip. Like, I wouldn't have spent that much money on that trip if we didn't have it.
Yeah.
And we were gonna, you know, go into debt on it.
All right, so let's talk about how you discuss this, Maggie.
Yeah, so this is a tough topic, right? Like we, our whole thing of having this podcast is trying to normalize the idea of talking about money with your friends and family. And that there's actually, we want to normalize it. And there's actually a lot of benefit that comes from having these open financial discussions. But look, you're merging two families. So you're not just having discussions with like your spouse. It's someone that you're still somewhat in the grand scheme of things early on in a relationship with, right? You've not even married this person yet. So it's the beginning of your relationship in many ways. You're involving another family, and figuring out who's going to pay for all this stuff, particularly a wedding, because when you're a kid and it's for a mitzvah, it's your parents are paying for it. Though I would love to find a scenario where we've got some 13-year-old who's like saved up because wants to have a really, really
some
badass
crypto
party.
Boss who pays for his own $1 million bar mitzvah.
I'm sure there's some like social media influencers who funded their own bar mitzvah. Okay, so anyways, you likely with like a wedding, it's going to involve conversations with your soon-to-be spouse and their families, and these can be like some tough and awkward discussions. So I did a little research, and I recently got turned on to the Emily Post Institute podcast, which is like the grandkids of Emily Post, because they did a whole thing on FIRE that I posted. They did a whole little segment on FIRE and what to tell people if you're retired. But some quotes from their site. What we suggest is that brides and grooms sit down and have a very open and candid conversation with both sets of their parents or whoever they think would be open to helping out or has said that they want to. So it could be that you have like a family member that wants to help out. Sometimes the conversation is about the traditional financial divisions, and their parents might say, hey, we're happy for you. We love you, but you're on your own. This does happen. Dividing wedding costs can cause scary conversations, but every couple needs to have them, where they're talking about dividing wedding costs between themselves or just amongst their families. And so on how to start the discussion, they literally give a little bit of like a script, if you will, where they say like, you know, we just wanted to check in and see if the wedding budget is something that you feel you can contribute to, or if this is something that you don't think you can or even want to contribute to. Right? You got to start off that discussion some way. So it might be awkward or scary, but basically what we're saying is just start the discussion, have an open discussion. And I think a lot of it depends on like where you're at in your life, right? If you're in your early 20s is a lot different than if you're like more established and in your 30s or 40s and you've had, you know, a career for 10 plus years and you have a lot of your own money at that point. But the idea is you're going to need to have a discussion to figure out what makes sense and how you end up paying for that.
And the more aligned with the values of the people you're talking about, the easier this conversation is going to be. So if you have very frugal parents and you are talking about some $100,000 wedding, this is going to be a very uncomfortable conversation. And there's going to be like very little movement between either sides. But if you are starting these discussions early and what you are talking about aligns with the values of the family and everybody involved, I think you're going to find these conversations to be a lot easier than you might otherwise think.
Yeah. And I think some of the advice on even from Emily Post's Institute was start with your expectations low, right? Understand that you might get a no, I can't afford this, I don't believe in whatever you want. And that way you're not as heartbroken, right? You're kind of setting the bar low and saying, hey, whatever somebody's willing to pay is just like icing on the cake of something that, you know, we don't have to pay for. And so I think that's good advice also, is like, you know, set the bar low and then be surprised and delighted with whatever you do get.
So Maggie, that piece of advice is really focused about how you talk to your parents about how you might pay for how they might contribute to a wedding. But as a parent, like you and I are now in a different situation where we are going to have kids who are going to want to do things and hopefully not get married for a very long time, but that will eventually come. And like, we think that the best approach, like all money conversations, is just to be transparent with your kids about this stuff, and talk to them about what your concerns are, what your limitations are if you can't afford to do things, and provide some additional ideas and try to work with them. But don't have a debilitating fear of disappointing your kids. You should instead make this a teachable moment, because your kids, especially like if we're talking about a bar mitzvah, they're young. They may not understand and they may think this is normal. If you don't use this as an opportunity to teach them about alternatives, they're going to continue going through their lives thinking that excessive spending is okay.
Yeah, I have kids. Well, hey, Mike, real quick, curious. So your daughters, I'm assuming you're not really raising them.
No.
Jewish. Okay, so you're not planning on having.
No.
Okay. So I have kids of that age, so I can imagine, I know the conversations we have about money. They're very capable. When you're doing a bar mitzvah, right, you're dealing in the even lead up to it, right? You're dealing with an 11 and a 12-year-old. They're very capable of understanding a lot of things about money. And so, and then obviously when you're dealing with someone old enough to get married, they're definitely capable. And so it's very realistic to have open and honest conversations about what you can afford, right? About, there's no reason to, like, you don't want to stress your kids out, but you also want to be like transparent of like, hey, I know, you know, your friend may have had this, but like, this is what we can afford, right? And like that, again, that is a teachable moment. And there's nothing wrong with having a very open discussion with your kids. I actually think it builds a lot of like financial acumen, humility.
Absolutely. You should be doing this expenses all the time.
Yeah, we do this. And again, it's a fine line between like stressing your kids out and making them understand the cost of things, right? And the trade-offs associated with that. And so, you know, I think there's one thing when we talk about like bar and bat mitzvahs, which applies to fewer people just based on the, you know, percentage. I actually know the percentage of the US population, Mike, that's Jewish. Do you?
12%?
No, it's like 2%. It's like 2.4%.
Oh.
Does that sound like an off stat? I think that's about...
No, yeah, I guess, that was in I the guess US. That's right.
Yeah, it's actually pretty small in terms of who this would apply to. But so weddings, though, much higher percentage of people mm-hmm. get married. And so weddings is one where like you can have some trade-off discussions with your kids, right? And I know a lot of people who have said like, hey, I'm going to give you this much money. You can use it for a wedding or a house down payment, right? I know yeah. multiple people who have positioned it that way. The person who wrote in the question was saying, you know, when he got married to his wife, they had an offer to have a larger sum of money for the down payment of their first home. And he was like, I wanted to take that. And my wife wanted to have a big wedding, right? And so there's nothing wrong with proposing trade-offs to your kids, right? Of like, even to a 13-year-old, right? Of saying like, look, I'll spend a lot more on your bar bat mitzvah, but it's going to impact the car you get when you're 16.
Yeah.
We won't have as much money for that. And so look, that's a tougher decision for a child to make. I'm not saying you put it all in their hands, but I'm also saying you can have these discussions. You can and should have these discussions with your kids. See how they respond. You might be surprised. You might see kids, you know, I'm surprised all the time by the financial discussions I have with my kids and the trade-offs they're even willing to make at a young age.
So Maggie, let's talk about how you and I are planning on having the wedding cost conversation with our kids.
Yeah. So mine is like similar to how I feel about college and cars and a bunch of things. But like, to me, it depends on my financial situation at the time, right? So it's a combo of that, how my kids are, and what we collectively decide makes sense at the time. So I can't predict it all now, right? To me, I want, you know, my kids to have like a respect and appreciation for money. And if I see them handling it responsibly and I have the money to give and I know that they're going to, I just think there's so many factors. It's hard to say. So like if my child is marrying somebody who's got a really, really wealthy family and they're willing to kick in a lot, I'm like, I'm not going to feel as much pressure. I'm still willing to kick in if I have it. Again, I'm not willing to go into debt over this stuff. And my decision will be, I say a game time decision, but it won't be like, you know, last minute like that. But it'll be a game time decision based on the players on the field. I was trying to make a sports analogy. This isn't going to end well. It's going to like halfway trickle off into some other reference. But it is going to matter a lot on just the situations, right? The details at the time of what's happening.
So to summarize, your answer is TBD.
My answer is it depends. And there's a lot of factors. Yeah. I could play out the 20 scenarios and let you know what my decision will be in each scenario. But.
All right.
What about you?
My plan, first, I am relying on a lifetime of a certain type of parenting to influence how my kids are going to approach these situations when they're older. And I look back on my own childhood and the way like we travel with our kids, the way we do gifts with our kids, the way we talk about expenses and pay for activities with our kids over the next 10 or 15 years is going to continue to have an impact on them, where I am confident that they are going to have much more modest desires when it comes to a wedding, for instance. And I think they're going to end up being pretty frugal, confident in that. Regardless of what happens with that, I'm going to work with them and propose a modest payment or
a dowry. What are you talking about?
No. Payment. Sorry. Not a payment. a modest amount to cover. I'm going to focus on a wedding because this one's like, yeah, this one will, right, will come up.
It's
and
applicable.
I think it's the most clear example. And so I will at the time, like, I will know what my kids are interested in, and I will make some recommendations and I will do some research and I will say, listen, I think you could have a fantastic wedding for $10,000 or $15,000. Here are some examples. Here's why I think it would be great for you. I'm willing to fund that
Pinterest,
for you.
Are you going to be like, here's a Pinterest board, yeah, I've been
or
creating,
whatever is around in 15 years. And so I'm going to give you $15,000. If you want to spend more than that on something, then you can certainly go do that with your own money. And if you want to spend less, you can have the difference. But I'm going to be here and I'm going to work with you and help you as much as possible to make this a fantastic event.
Yeah, I agree. I like that approach where, and that's why I say like, I can't predict that approach. Cause I think a lot of this depends on like, how responsible your children turn out, how, mm-hmm. you know, like things can go a lot of different directions and, right. You know, through over the years. And so, yeah, if my kids are the way I was when I was getting married, yeah, I like the idea of like, here's a reasonable sum of money that I can contribute. Use it for whatever you want, right? Put it towards a house down payment, put it towards a, you know, but like, good luck in life. Mm-hmm. Get out of my house. Just kidding. And I actually hope my kids get married a little later in life too. Like I think I got married way too young, and I'm definitely a proponent of like, there's no reason for people to be getting married in their early 20s. I'm not knocking it. It might work for some people, but it's just not necessary, right? Take your time. Yeah. Anyways.
This was fun, Maggie. I enjoyed this episode.
Yeah. We're going to do an episode on prenup soon, Mike. So that'll mm-hmm. be a good follow on to keep your ears out. I was going to say keep your eyes out. Keep your eyes and ears out for that episode soon, because that will hopefully be a equally fun and interesting discussion on a related topic of, you know, before you have that big wedding, consider a prenup. Okay, should we do our top three takeaways?
All right, let's do it.
Okay, number one. Everyone's approach can and should be different based on your situation and values. Be intentional with what you decide to do with these big life events.
Number two, don't succumb to peer pressure for weddings, bar mitzvahs, for anything when it comes to spending money.
Yeah, because nobody cares, right, Mike?
Right, nobody cares.
Number three, except maybe your kids. So number three, talk to your kids about this stuff. It is okay for them to understand these things earlier in life and have these, you know, open and frank discussions regarding money and what stuff costs.
All right, Maggie, I look forward to, in whatever, 15 years when our first kid gets married, revisiting how this goes for us in real life and seeing if our plans work out.
I was thinking, will we still be doing this show in 15 years when our kids are getting married?
Probably not, but I hope we're still friends.
Oh, that's nice. I was thinking more like maybe, you never know, we might still be doing the show, you know? I could see it having a long 1, run.
Episode 1000.
Yeah, I'm going to have to change up my number sequencing by then. And I was about to do an impersonation of my like old lady voice, and then I was like, well, I mean, I'm going to be that like 55. Yeah. Okay, and I can't do math. Would I be 57? Gosh, I wish I could fast forward. I'm just so curious what life will be like in like 20 years. My kid, just everything, you know? Or mm-hmm. will I have run out of money? Will I, you know, just all these things? Will I have gone back to work? Like, what will happen?
Boy, that's a rabbit hole. I don't want to get down on the end of this show.
Okay. Well, thanks for listening. If you have been challenged or inspired by what you've heard, please rate and review the show. You can always subscribe to make sure that you never miss an episode.
If you have any thoughts or questions, we'd love to hear from you. Just like the question that kicked off this episode about wedding costs.
Exactly.
And you can leave us a voicemail or text us at 404-981-3370 or hit us up on Instagram.
I was also going to add, if you want to give Mike a very, very, very belated bar mitzvah gift, you can go leave him a review for the podcast on Apple Podcasts. A written review. It really helps us. And, you know, if you have something positive to share, leave us a review. If you don't, you don't even have to waste your time. That's great. And on that note, thanks, Mike. I'll see you later. Bye.
All right. Bye.